Anime World War II is hell. This week on It's So Bad, we're adding Valkyria Chronicles to the endless list. Welcome, Chris and Matt.
Michael, hello.
To the podcast.
Valkyria Chronicles is anime World War II. All right.
You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, Podbean, everywhere you find your podcast. Spotify, yeah, that's on there. I found it on there. We're adding this week Valkyria Chronicles to the Endless List, which I think is our first tactics game on the Endless List. Is that correct?
Is this our first tactical RPG?
I think so. Yeah, it is.
Huh.
Our first one on the list.
And, I don't know. Was Kim Kardashian Hollywood? Was that?
That was not a tactics game. That was an RPG. That was a casual RPG, as I have it.
I mean, Tecmo Super Bowl is kind of like a tactics game.
No. This is our first turn-based tactics game.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Of course.
So our endless list currently runs from number 1 Super Mario 64 to number 78 Jurassic Park Trespasser. We are adding this week Valkyria Chronicles to it, which was a PS3 game. Originally came out in 2008. You can find it currently on PC, PS3, PS4, and Switch. I just want to point out that it is excellent on the Switch. It's really great to have the portable flexibility and be able to play that game. And it works great, even though it's still the same game that it was 12 years ago. But what is this game, Chris? You picked it out, so you... What is this game?
So, yeah, I did pick this game out because I played it... I do a staycation every year, right around Thanksgiving. And I like to try to beat like an RPG during that staycation. And last year, I chose Valkyria Chronicles, and it is... essentially a World War II anime simulator, but set in a fictitious world. But it is kind of like a tactical RPG that's a little bit different than what you would probably be used to, like a Fire Emblem or like a Final Fantasy Tactics game, where it kind of combines a little bit of real-time action as you move your units across a battlefield. But then, like, your own actions and aiming are essentially turn-based. But there are still some live elements to navigating your characters across the battlefield. And it's very tank-heavy, very very heavy on the strategy of what sort of squad you're going to deploy. Very strategy-heavy. So there's a lot of different ways to approach a mission, which, essentially the goal is to capture the enemy's base, although there are some variations on that theme.
Right. And so I think we all just came into this game without any nostalgia for it at all, and we all just kind of approach this with fresh eyes. I think there's some of us on this call that may be more into tactics games than others, but I think we've all played a fair bit of them. I, for example, have a long history in tactics games. I played them in the 90s. I was playing XCOM, XCOM Apocalypse, those types of games in the early 90s. I think that my curve with tactics games kind of follows the same curve that many people have with it, because they kind of fell into obscurity in the late 90s, early aughts, and then they came back with... in the early 2010s, really, with XCOM Enemy Unknown. That was kind of like a big blockbuster tactics games that brought tactics back to the forefront for a lot of people. But like, I've played Final Fantasy Tactics. I've played your Banner Sagas, played XCOM games. I've played a lot of different, played Fire Emblem, played a lot of different tactics games. Are you guys all pretty well versed in the tactics genre?
I would say, Matt, you can go first.
I've played the XCOM games. I've I'm recently playing the Gears Tactics game. let's see. I mean, even like the early, like the first two Fallouts are pretty tactics-y. Fallout Tactics itself. I have experience with them.
I think I'm actually not super well versed in tactics games. Like, you know, I've played some Fire Emblem games and some Final Fantasy Tactics games, but that's kind of like really the extent of it. I played like some real time strategy games, obviously, but that doesn't really apply here. I think this kind of more appeals to the side of me that's like really into like JRPGs, and I think that's probably more what pulled me to this game more than the tactics side of it.
Right. It seems like you see this game on a shelf or like on Steam, like you get drawn to the fact that it's anime World War II, and then you find out it's not a turn-based RPG, it's a turn-based tactics game. I feel like that's kind of the flow.
Mm.
Right. So a couple things. I was doing some research behind this for like what the history of tactics games were. And so there were like I was looking at Wikipedia in particular. There's a couple tactics games that came out in the early 80s. There's Tanktix, which is computer a game of armored combat on the Eastern Front, which is like a really early tactics game. And there's 1981, there's a game called Eastern Front 1941. And then Chris, the reason why I'm bringing this up, Chris, in 1983, there's a Commodore 64 Godzilla game that's a tactics game.
Oh,
where
yes,
you stop Godzilla.
Yes, there is. And then there is a Godzilla 2 on the NES, which comes,
right,
I think, in 1991. Is also a very poor tactics game.
Are you Godzilla or are you fighting against Godzilla?
In that game you fight against Godzilla, but you can in certain maps you can find Mothra and get Mothra to be on your side.
Oh, that's cool. Are you like army people controlling it, like, you know, humans?
Yeah, you
or
are.
Is it,
you
like,
are
you're
the
another monster.
You're the Japanese self-defense force, and it kind of plays like a really bad version of Advance Wars, in the sense that, like, you gotta kind of build your units, and... But that's a different podcast for a different time. Very, very collectible game, though. Very rare and very expensive.
Godzilla 2?
Godzilla 2. I have a complete inbox, FYI.
Cool.
Wow. Flex.
So, back to Valkyria Chronicles for a second, but... this game, initially, the developers, who's Sega, which at this time period, Sega was like grappling with creating new IP because they were like out of the Dreamcast business, and they were relying on those IP for a while, and then they started to make games like Yakuza for the PS2, and then they made Valkyria Chronicles and those games, and this is kind of one of their tentpole franchises now. I wouldn't say tentpole, but it's like their secondary franchise.
Right. I was surprised that there were so many games. Like, that there's four of them.
There's
five.
There's
five?
There's five, because there's like one spin-off game.
But I didn't know that there... I thought this was the only game.
It's interesting, because I just recently played Valkyria Chronicles 4, and Valkyria Chronicles 4 is essentially... like, it kind of forgets what all the other games did, and basically it plays like an upgraded version of the first game. You know, different story, different characters, but it returns like a lot of like... It's basically identical to this game, except there's like a new weapon class in that game. But
speaking of Sega IP, did you guys catch the like reference to another Sega IP? I believe it's Sega. In Valkyria Chronicles 1, it's a character.
No.
Which one?
What was it?
So you get Vice, the Berserker, or what's the Shock Trooper? There's a character, Vice, in your like roster.
Okay.
Vice, he looks like he's the same character as the Skies of Arcadia character.
Oh.
His name is Vice, and it's like the same face model.
Oh,
so the developer, one of the directors on this was working on Skies of Arcadia before he moved on to this.
Right.
So... and the other guy was working on, I forget what franchise, but yeah, so there were two different directors that came together to make this. Their initial pitch was called Galleon Panzers, and it was originally supposed to be developed for the PSP. It came out on PS3 when they announced the PS3, they changed their development. A lot of the things that they made for this game, the reason why you like zoom in, for example, when you take control of a unit was... the developers wanted you to have more of an emotional connection with the squad. So they wanted you to be directly in control of the character and see their faces and their actions when they did things in the world, right, so that you are more integrated with the squad, as opposed to, they initially developed this to have an overhead perspective, but they changed it because they thought this would make you more emotionally invested with the characters.
Yeah, so just to like reiterate, you kind of pick, you look at the overhead like strategy as if it was like a map that's updating, and you just see like little icons for each character related to their class. But yeah, once you decide you're actually going to use them, like use their action point, it switches into like this, it's almost like a third person shooter sort of perspective as you move the character around.
Yeah. And another thing that they did to kind of make you more emotionally invested was the AP system, the action point system. So it was designed to make you feel like you were on a battlefield and you had to cautiously move units that were scared to death of war to move around the area.
It is scary to move them. It feels like quite the commitment when you move them forward.
Yeah, because there is permadeath in this game. And,
yeah, and that was another thing that was added. It's like light permadeath compared to other tactics games.
Yeah, like
where
because you get like a window of opportunity to save your wounded character. Like they have three turns after they've been quote unquote knocked out. You have three turns to save
them.
If not, they die. Or if like an enemy touches them, they will die.
They die. Right. And so that's like, I actually enjoy that permadeath compared to like a Fire Emblem permadeath, where Fire Emblem, you can very easily get killed as a character sometimes in some of the Fire Emblem games, and then your guy's just gone forever. XCOM, it's more like they give you more of a buffer between permadeath because they have like medic units, mm-hmm, that can, or like first aid kits that
I
can
mean,
rebuild your
the
health.
They have the Ragnate in this, no? Like I found myself using
yeah
that a lot.
Yeah, yeah, but I'm more referring to like a Fire Emblem game where like health replenishment, some of them, is very limited, so it's more easy to die, which I find to be unfair in some of those games. So I didn't mind the permadeath in this game, and sometimes that's a really big qualm for me.
yeah, I mean, I definitely had certain characters. I had maybe, I can't fully remember, but maybe three or four characters die overall.
I had one. Oscar the Sniper died.
Oh, Oscar?
the brown-haired sniper.
But it was cool. Like, what I think was actually an awesome mechanic that kind of incentivized you to have characters die was the whole graveyard guy. Because as each character
yeah
died, he gave you a new order that you couldn't get otherwise.
And you might visit your fallen allies in the graveyard,
right,
too, which is depressing.
Well, and, like, he gave you... I recall, like, there's an artillery strike order he
yep
can give you. Like
that's the first one.
I think that's neat that normally in games like this, if you have a character that dies, you kind of feel the temptation to save, like, load an earlier save or try to get it perfect. And I think that, like, little extra bump to have guys die, I don't know. I thought it was a positive quality.
I will I will limit the comparisons to Valkyria Chronicles 4, but one thing that's like worth noting that when you have someone that dies in Valkyria Chronicles 4, like when you go back to the headquarters, they go like, "Oh, so and so who died? Yeah, they left this to you." And it's like some item that you get from them that was like left in a will to you specifically, and I was like, "Oh my god, that's depressing."
That is pretty depressing. Yeah, so one of the things also I think that makes you a bit more emotionally invested in the squad is when you do zoom in and somebody gets a hit, there's always like, they have like lines that they say that's like, "Hey, I got a hit," or "I hit him, the guy's
right
down," or
"Take
or
that,"
or "My boy Ted," who's like, says, "I'm Ted," when he hits people. But yeah,
but you
so you get like,
well, I was going to say, you reference like the some characters are scared to move around because they all have attributes. Every character has like unique attributes attached to them or that are supposed to kind of display their personality. And, you know, some are pacifists because, like, you know, getting into the story of the game, like the small country of Galia is being invaded by, you know, not Russia, Germany. And essentially most of the citizens have been conscripted into a militia to defend the country. And so you have some pacifists that were brought into that militia and they have attributes that kind of reflect like that aspect of their personality, amongst others, which I'm sure we will discuss.
Yeah, like Darkson hater. So if somebody is racist and you put them next to somebody in your squad that is that race, then they will sometimes miss their shots because they are too distracted by the person's race that's next to them. That's fucked up.
That's favorite,
in this game. The not Jews. The Darkson.
Sorry. My favorite perk was the... who's the old guy? The shock trooper?
I never used him.
I used him all the time. But what was cool is if you crouch with him, he has the bad back attribute. So he'd like always like let out a groan and like... So you'd be incentivized not to crouch with him.
And some people have...
Good personality.
Some people have allergy attributes. So if they're crawling through grass, like the pollen like bothers them and like their accuracy gets a little off. Like, that's a little bit more like...
Yeah, there's desert allergies too, and different environments have different allergies and stuff like that. Which I'm like, how is there a desert allergy? What is making you allergic to the desert?
Anakin Skywalker was very adamant in the prequels of saying he hated sand. I just think it's just like that.
It's an allergy of the mind.
But yeah, so one of the things about you know, we mentioned anime World War II at the very top, but like Gallia is definitely meant to evoke Belgium or the Netherlands. There's like windmills there, for example, and green fields, etc. Just the environments are designed to be like that. And the country even is kind of designed just to be like that. There's like things like there's a fortress battle that's meant to evoke the Maginot Line. Gallia is a direct riff on Gaul, which is, you know, the Roman name for France. There's the Empire and the Federation are based on Nazi Germany and the UK respectively. So like you just look at the Empire and it's straight up anime Nazis that sometimes have armor on.
But then there's also like reason. Magic and a princess and other like real whimsical anime ass shit.
Plus,
I think also
a quasi advanced race of like on the Valkyria just being like this right. race of people that just wield unimaginable power, but they're being weaponized and exploited.
The not Aryans,
right? The not Aryans.
So there's the Valkyria, which are like this special race that has magical powers that are only activated if they have like a near-death experience. Is that right?
Right. Yep. Right. Trauma has to bring out their
it's like
their hidden powers.
It's like a persona. And then,
and then there's the Darkson, which are the anime Jews, which are being persecuted for a cataclysm that happened many years ago. Like hundreds of years ago, but people still hate them for some reason. And they have blue hair.
Right. So I guess, like, you know, it being an RPG, this is a very, obviously, story-heavy game. And I think when I was playing this game, I bought it completely on a whim. I didn't know the story going into it. And I think as you guys were playing it, I think we all kind of had the same reaction. Like, the first, like, 8-9 missions of this game... It's very kind of like light for what it is. Like, it's kind of like anime fluffy. You're at war with like this, you know, this evil empire. And then all of a sudden, like you have this one mission right around mission 10 or 11, whatever it is. Like, you literally are freeing Darksons from a concentration camp. And they kill everybody. And the empire kills everybody in the concentration camp. And I remember sitting there going, like, I was like, holy shit, the tone that just shifted here. Like, I was not prepared for.
It shifts pretty erratically back and forth, though. Because then they're still like, oh, okay, like, let's go to the next town.
Yeah, Zaka's just like, forget about it. Right. You know, it's cool.
Everyone's like extreme. Like, so Welkin is the, Welkin and Alicia are, like, your two main characters in this game. And, you know, Welkin is just like, he never stops being optimistic. Like, he's always just kind of bright-eyed and just, you know, like, they, like, the good guys really, they, like, they go through the mud in this game. Like, it is, yeah, like, a dark story for a long time.
He's anime Ned Flanders, essentially.
Yeah.
Because his vocals in the English, Matt, did you play English? I know, Chris, you played in Japanese, right?
Yes.
So the vocals in English, he was just like so bland. He was like, white bread is white bread.
Right.
I'd say the voice acting in the Japanese dub is really, really good. Like, everyone's like really emoted really well. Yeah, but not to get sidetracked, but like the voice acting in the Japanese version or Japanese dub is very great.
There's like some really bad spots in the English. Like Rosie is like, I'm like
the New York accent.
Yeah, with that New York accent, she talks like this.
Oh, sorry. So that sucks because Rosie is like one of like the main characters. Like, so the main characters are like plot armor. They're never gonna die permanently.
Right.
But Rosie,
she hates
was,
the Darkson.
Right, and she was actually like one of my favorite characters because like she. Her story arc is that, so Welkin, your main hero, has an adopted Darkson sister, or a stepsister, who is
East?
Kind of, yes, East, and like, so she's part of like the group, and
well, she's the tank driver.
Yeah, so like Welkin.
She's a pretty integral part of the group, which I think is like a cool thing with Rosie.
Well, spoilers,
she can't
she
just
dies.
Write her off.
So,
wait, what?
So Rosie is pretty open in her, like, just hatred of Dachshunds, and East just keeps trying to, like, befriend her and be nice to her, and then, like, eventually like, she kind of breaks down, like Rosie had, like...
This, it was at the concentration camp, I think.
Yeah, and it's, like, and, like, Rosie's starting to realize, like, how wrong it is to be a racist, because, you know, that's fucking wrong, don't do that. And then, like, just as, like, they really, really connect... like East, who is like a young girl, is killed by a sniper by getting shot through the neck right in front of Rosie. And then like she just kind of stands there, and, like, it was great. It like really hit my heartstrings.
A real clash.
That was kind of like a standout like moment. You're like, oh my god, what is happening?
And let's keep it up. Like, when I said like this is literally all the characters are as fucking anime as they get. And, you know, so spoilers, we've talked about, this is the third game we're talking about today. We're talking about two games that are kind of dark in tone and tenor. And this, like, most every level in this game happens in broad daylight. It's bright, it's sunny,
yeah.
There's flowers.
There's, like, flowers everywhere.
And there's, like, this awful, terrible stuff is happening to all these bright-eyed... anime characters.
Well, and they like gun down like three other dudes, and they're just like, "Oh, well, golly gee, good job."
I'm Ted.
It's so fucked up, but it's so bright at the same time.
Right,
but it works.
So, I was looking up Rosie's voice actor because for the English version, because I was like, "Man, she sounds a lot like Launch, the bad Launch from Dragon Ball Z." And I looked her up. She also did the voice work for Yuna in Final Fantasy X. Interesting.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, that's funny. But yeah, anime World War II is hell, as we said. But yeah, I mean, I think this game is like a fairly good tactics game, but it's not like a top-tier tactics game. It feels like it's like a middle-range or upper-middle-range tactics game for me. And for me, the thing that I didn't like about it was the imprecise nature of how you moved. And you have like a limit and there's a bar that decreases the more you walk, but it's very, you don't know how far you can go because you're in the third person perspective. So it's hard to judge the distance that you want to go to. So you have to be extremely cautious when you're moving.
There's like blocky geography sometimes.
Right.
You like
right.
Get around a gate. I think all of this could have been resolved if they just had allowed you to undo your move.
Oh, yeah,
like move
100%.
And then just undo. Like,
or have a circle around you that denotes your limit of how far you can go.
Right, because I agree that that was annoying, but I did appreciate that it wasn't, like, grid-based, that the movement, like, there are nuances, and you can like nudge in different directions for movement because that same sort of blocky geography allowed for a lot of cover. Like you could pretty easily hide behind a tree and mm-hmm. be confident that all of the bullets would be blocked.
Right.
So I did appreciate that it was like a little more contiguous, I guess, than the grid-based XCOM stuff.
I guess like a good thing to kind of note off of what you just said, Matt, is like, you know, an important thing in this game is like you have line of vision sights. So it's like you can see lines of like as to
right.
if like you like your line of vision is one color, if you can see an enemy but they can't see you. And that's important.
Just different
in this
classes
game, like,
have different.
Exactly, ranges. Right. It's like that's important in this game because like when the enemy characters move, you can only see if they are at, like where they're actually moving to, if like you have characters that can have a clear line of sight on them. And so like, you know, I like how it's like you could be a little strategic and defensive just by moving people just to kind of open up your vision of the battlefield,
right.
which I thought
there's
was
like
cool.
a fog of war that's pretty dynamic.
Mm. And like I kind of said earlier when I was talking about the gameplay, like, I don't know, I haven't played a ton of tactics games, so I don't know if this is, like, a really unique mechanic or not, but I like if you're moving both enemies or your characters, and they are within a range of, you know, your character's weapon, like, they will actively take shots at the enemy while they are moving into, like, their position that you've picked for them. And
that's traditional.
And the inverse will happen to you, so...
Yeah, that's in tactics games. Usually it's like an ability you activate. Like in XCOM, it's called Overwatch. I think it's just generally known in tactics games as Overwatch.
Mm. But for here, it's like automatic, though.
It's cool that it's default.
Yeah.
Right.
Like always on.
Right.
Because you could set up, like, you could be hiding around the corner and pretty easily set up a couple guys there that if the enemy just comes around, they get killed
right.
in no time.
Right. I think the use of cover, and especially with the tank, because you had to use the tank as cover.
Yeah, so there's
was
always
pretty,
a tank. That's, I guess,
right.
say that. You always
and
have
then
the Edelweiss.
And then halfway through, you get the Shamrock, which is
right.
Zach's.
The Shamrock is
pretty little...
awful.
Well,
I thought it was pretty good.
Really?
Yeah, I
oh.
upgraded it, yeah. and it was great. Yeah, it was fine.
I thought the tanks were a little OP.
Shamrock is the like a tank that has plot armor, so like never gonna permadie. So
right.
I would often just use the Shamrock to divert forces away from my guys who are trying to accomplish the objective.
Yeah.
And that's
like
what
scout.
I would use the Shamrock for. Yeah, exactly.
Because often if the Edelweiss died, the mission failed.
Yeah,
so
the,
you
right,
use
yeah,
this other
right.
tank just as like fodder.
But yeah, I also think this game does a really good job of using the different classes. Sometimes in class-based games, you just skip over classes, but all of the classes had their positives and negatives, and you needed to use them a lot. And it was funny because when I went into this game and I saw Scout as a class, I'm like automatically thinking to myself, I'm never going to use that because it sucks usually in most games.
Little did
but
you know.
The Scout in this game is really good, but they all have their uses.
I only really ended up using the Scout. I would usually just bring one.
Really?
No, I use like
engineers?
Two or three.
I would bring probably one or two engineers and one Scout. Maybe two
I'd
Scouts.
I'd only ever bring...
Shock Troopers was the majority of my army.
I never use Shock Troopers. I use like one or two with permission, and then I had two or three Scouts. And depending upon the mission, you need Lancers. So Lancers are the anti-tank guys. Shock Troopers are anti-personnel. Scouts are like they move far and they're good against personnel sometimes not. But the fact that they move far was like a thing that I used to my advantage a lot. And then you had the Sniper, which is like, I feel like in the beginning it's pretty OP when you first get it, but then it's like diminishes over time. But it, again, depends. All of these things depend upon the map. And the units
right.
that you use. If you have like an open map, you can more easily use a sniper. Whereas if you have like you're moving building to building around corners, snipers aren't that useful. So I think they did a really good job of making you use all of the various different classes in this
game. They did. I think, you know, so there's another thing you can do, another mechanic in this game, like Welkin can issue orders, like, and you learn more orders as you go throughout the game. And but, like, one of them is, like, the demolition order. And what the demolition order does basically makes, like, your scouts and shock troopers, like, really effective against tanks. And once you have, like, that order unlocked, it kind of eliminates the need to have lancers for the most part. Because
I don't know if I use that.
Oh,
I never use orders at all.
It's a
like ever.
So I did not start using them till very late in the game, and then I realized like how overpowered orders are in Valkyria Chronicles. Like when you exploit them, like it's like there's some levels towards the end of the game that are very like centered around destroying like tank battalions and stuff like that, and like the demolition order in those levels, like it turns your scouts and shock troopers basically into like tank destroyers for like a turn, which is really
maybe I was
really
misusing
unbalanced.
Them. Do you use the? Did you use like their guns to destroy the tanks when you did that?
Yeah, but the demolition order like basically it turns like every round they fire into like basically like half the power of like one.
I might have been
rocket, so
I might have been misusing that because I kept using that on my lancers and I found that it was like a pretty negligible damage boost to them.
Yeah,
so maybe I should have been doing it on like the bullet.
Yeah, the scout. It's to really exploit the scouts and shock troopers, the demolition orders.
So, what is everybody's favorite mission that you remember and that you really liked? Because for me, I really liked the mission in the ruined city. That was like the second to last mission, I think, or the third to last mission, where you're going against the big tank and there's a bunch of tanks that you have to destroy. It's like, it feels like it should be the last mission of the game, but it's not the last mission of the game.
Right.
Before they're like in the ever increasing Death Star type situation of the tanks, where it was like, you know, in Star Wars, they're like, oh, here's a Star Destroyer in the first movie. Then they're like in the last movie, they're in the original trilogy. They're like, here's a Super Star Destroyer. So in the new trilogy, they had to be like, Here's the Death Star, and then here's the giant moon that we have, and now here's the giant Emperor's new spaceship. They always have to make something bigger. And in this game, it was like, here's a tank. Well, here's the super tank. Here's the super duper tank. But yeah, the tank mission where you have to go through the ruined city and destroy the tank commander's tank was like the best
that,
mission.
Is that where you're blocking the, you like shoot down the rubble to...
No, that's early on when you're going against a Maximilian's tank.
Well, I thought there was a later one. Maybe I'm mistaken. There's another big tank you fight, like Maximilian's more.
There's a lot of
big
tanks.
Yeah, there's a lot of tanks.
Yeah.
Fair.
I'm talking, so there's like a mission, I think there's like four or five tanks in it, and then there's the guy who's like a begrudging Imperial, who I feel like after that mission he's like, I'm quitting the Empire now?
Right, because
he's like...
It's been a few months since I played it, but isn't he part of the Empire because he's basically trying to protect his country from the Empire?
So yeah. He's Belarus. He's like Belarusia or Poland, essentially. So, but that mission was great. What do you guys like? Which mission did you guys like?
Chris,
or remember
one?
The best?
I really liked... it's kind of around the midpoint of the game, the one where the you're kind of fighting in that cavern, and there's, like, the armored tank that's, like, kind of driving back and forth in, like, the background. And it's, like, firing the missiles, like, at you. Like,
oh,
on the train tracks.
Yeah, and it's, like, like there's a lot of bridges to go over. I really like that. Yeah. That was, like, a level where it's, like...
That was a big scale.
Yeah, I love the levels where it's, like, you divide your forces to, like, different fronts. And, like, you're trying to, like, simultaneously take different points at the same time rather than work your way through one or another and another and another. Mm-hmm. Like... It's like you're fighting
mission,
two battles on the field at once. I love those levels.
That mission with the train is the first mission where they're like, they stopped introducing new mechanics and they're like, here, just have everything.
Right, exactly.
Except for, I think the only one that they didn't, that was after that is the smokescreen, I think.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
true.
Pretty, you know, they're, basically the entire middle chunk of the game, like all those missions, I really, really like those missions a lot.
Yeah, when they start doing like the Maximilian giant tank thing at the very end, I didn't like those missions. But the middle missions were really good.
Mm.
Yeah, my favorite was I'm looking it up now. It's the Mulberry Shore one. It's like kind of like the Omaha Beach level.
Oh yeah, that's a good one too.
I liked that just because it, even though there weren't, I guess, many mechanics to it. I guess the turrets, like the bunkers shooting the machine guns, they're kind of a mechanic. But there, you're using like the smoke screen a lot.
Right, that's where it's introduced.
Oh, is it where that's introduced? Okay, yeah. And you have to do this like big. Basically, at some point, your tanks can no longer go forward, but they still have to keep smoke screening for your enemy or soldiers that are keep going forward. And it's basically like Omaha Beach, sort of, if you get up on the mainland and blow up the bunkers. But I just thought that one stands out to me.
You know, these battles are long, like especially once you kind of get beyond the midpoint, it's like every level is about, you know, could take you like 30 to 40 minutes, maybe, you know, and it's like, and the, you get a, like a really, you get a really satisfied feeling when you finally send someone in to capture that base and you've cleared the level. Like you just kind of go, whoa, that was like a, that was a draining 30 minutes right there.
That Mulberry Shore mission in particular, I remember being like, this mission's still going, when I had to turn around the corner and go down and get to the smoke screen. Yeah. So, yeah, I think they're very good length. I think at the beginning they seem like they're longer. But then as you get to the middle, it's like, okay, these are pretty good.
You become familiar with the game too, just like how it operates.
Yeah, and I think in most tactic teams, I don't usually save in the middle of a battle. So for me, it was like very different to be able to save in the middle of a battle. Because typically they discourage you from doing that because they don't want you to save scum every move that you make.
So it took me until probably like the very end of the game to learn that I played it on Steam. I don't know if it's different interface on other platforms, but it was confusing to me. I didn't realize I had more than one save slot. So every time I saved, it was like a commitment because I only had one save file. So that kind of inadvertently prevented me from save scumming too much.
I didn't save scum at all in this game.
Well, I'm saving mid-mission.
Now, did you guys... So I played on the PS4, which came with the DLC missions included. Did you guys... like? So one is like Edie, who's like one of like your random... you know, platoon characters, like she gets her own mission, and there's another DLC mission where you play as, is it Bliss? Bliss is the Valkyrie for the Empire?
No, Silvaria.
Silvaria. Isn't Silvaria Bliss? Whatever. You play as Silvaria, who's the Valkyria for the Empire. There's a mission where you play as her.
Yeah, I didn't play as any I didn't play any of the DLC.
Those are good. But yeah, they're challenging. They're super challenging, but they're fun.
So we are deep into this conversation. We should probably talk about the ranking, where this game goes on our endless list, if you guys think that it's time.
I mean, I guess, you know, the only other thing we've kind of glossed over is the whole Art of Combat presentation using the, like storybook kind of format, I guess, like with comic book panels within each page. So you're essentially like each section is a chapter. And you see all these different cutscenes as like parts of a book that you kind of unlock as you progress through the game. I thought that was done pretty really cool. Well, I really liked it.
Yeah,
it never. I mean, the effect didn't wear off. I still enjoyed it. I liked being able to easily replay older cutscenes if I like stopped and wanted to resume and figure out where I was. I did that a couple times. I mean,
it was nice to play again. When you're at the base, you have, like, the reporter character who's, like, kind of... You can unlock, like, you know, side stories for, like, some of, like, your lesser-known characters. Like, you know.
Did you unlock them all?
Yeah, I did.
There was, like, the swimsuit spring break one.
Yes, there is. Yeah, there has to be the beach one. Oh. You know, it just has to be.
I had a feeling when I saw the title of it and that it was, like, 10 times more than every other... story. I had a feeling.
I want you guys to go onto the Valkyria wiki, by the way. I don't know if you guys have checked out the Valkyria wiki.
I think but so. Just oh, is this the background image something a little suspect?
Oh my god, why is this like this?
Is it hosted by fandom, or is it a different site that hosts the wiki?
That was fandom. Yeah, click fandom. On the fandom one.
Because I was on it, but again, I was looking at it on my tablet. I didn't see it, but
yeah, it's extreme. It's on it's extreme boobage for some reason on there.
I would guess that comes from the fourth game then, which plays more like. I don't know, like, what World War II movie to compare this one to, but the fourth one plays like MASH, basically.
This is just like straight up hentai. It's done. Yeah. I like looked it up at work one time and I was like, oh,
yeah, not a good look.
But so our ranking. So I'm trying to figure out where this game we should start this conversation, and I really don't know. So you guys,
it sounds like we all had a really positive experience with this game.
I like this game a lot.
This is a game. So when we do the endless list, as Mike will usually prompt us, like, you know, we talk about all facets of the game, right? And it's always kind of like graphics, gameplay, just how much fun we had. You know, legacy is usually a factor in. I feel like even though, yes, this did launch a franchise of five games, like, and some mangas, and I think that's pretty much it. I think it's just games and manga. Like, this is kind of like an under-the-radar franchise. Like, it's popular, but not super popular. You know, not influential in any games that came after it or whatever. So it's just, you know, I guess it's kind of just where did we just kind of have fun with this, I guess.
Yeah, and for me, like, I look at this list and thinking about this, and, like, we have this block of PS3 games that are Dishonored, Batman Arkham Asylum, Dead Space that we just added last week. And, like, I don't think this game goes above those games as my, like, hard stop. And, like, even a game like Guru, Mark of the Wolves, which is, like, a premier fighting game. I don't think it goes above that either.
Where's Mark the Wolves again?
30?
Yeah.
So, like...
Or 29. DuckTales is 30.
No, you have to reload the page. Yep. We added a game. Even, like, DuckTales, maybe I don't see this game... DuckTales is a pretty good platformer. I could hear an argument where it could go above it, but... around there, I would say, is, like, my hard limit.
Right. So, like, right. 31 is DuckTales. And then I kind of look at the next few. Bayonetta is 32. I think that's getting pretty close. And then I kind of drop down all the way to the bottom, or, you know, down a few. 36 is Onimusha. I think this is better than Onimusha. It's like,
Matt,
not getting too far down.
Matt, would you say this is better than Space Invaders, which is 33?
I think this is... better than Space Invaders.
I think this is better than God of War, personally.
I enjoy it. I'm not the biggest God of War fan.
I am a big fan of God of War, and I still think it's better.
Oh, I think the God of War franchise, I think, becomes really good. That first game, I'm just not super big on. This is like another one that I think, you know, I think I'm a little bit more... fond of the JRPGs than other people in our group. Like, I guess, again, to me, I go, like, well, my ceiling would probably be, again, would be the original Dragon Quest. But...
Do we think that this game goes at number 32? Or does it go at 31?
I was
going to
say 30. Well, I do think it's better than Bayonetta, which is currently 32.
Okay.
Would you agree, Mikey? Chris, you have
Bayonetta, right? I think it's better than the original Bayonetta. I think Bayonetta 2 goes above Bayonetta anyways.
Yeah, you know, I think I would put this above DuckTales, which is the next game afterwards, because, like, it's a really fun game, but, like, I don't think it's, like, you know, it's a reskinned Mega Man game, you know, but it's not Mega Man.
Right. I think as a complete package... I, like, come back to it and I'm, like, thinking to myself of the good times I had with my squad. Not even, like, the main characters, but, like, Wavy, who is a Darkson scout who I really enjoyed playing as. And, like, Hannes, who was, like, a bull shock trooper. Ted, who's my scout, who I, like, can remember off the top of my head. And they're memorable characters that aren't characters that are fleshed out at all.
Yeah, you know? it's like, this game's like an emotional roller coaster, you know? And it's like, and when they die, it's like, you can, like, open up, like, the journal entry and see, like, what their hopes and dreams were. to do after the war, and you know,
they get endings too, right? All the squad characters get endings. They have like a line ending.
Yeah. They have like a wrap up to their story. You know, Scrooge McDuck, he just wants to jump in his vault of money. You know, that's his story.
I love DuckTales, but I think I agree with you. I agree with you both. I think this is just a more complete and more satisfying package.
Cool. I think we're all in agreement. This is the first time.
I don't know if it goes above Guru. I think Guru is like mechanically almost perfect and just like
such a super fun fighting game.
Yeah. There's so many good things Guru's got going for it that I don't know. I mean,
I'm not familiar with Guru, so I'm good with whatever at this point.
Let's put it at 31 then.
All right.
I think that's a good spot.
Okay.
That is a good spot.
I think that's top 31 game.
Guys, we're so optimistic, just like Welkin is in the face of never ending tragedy. Just so optimistic.
All out attack. Is that one of his orders? No. I you know, one of the things I didn't like, and I didn't talk about this, when the enemy orders an all out attack, it's like so long, the animation, I'm like, just say all out attack. Don't fucking motherfucker.
You don't like the order animation? Every time the order animation popped up, I was like, oh my god, I am about to get my shit tossed all around. And then like
not
maybe
if they
nothing
did
really
it.
Bad happened, so.
There's some missions where they do it every turn and it's like, ugh, stop doing it. But I like this game. This game was good.
I like having this between Guru and DuckTales, because I feel like Guru and DuckTales were this blob that was kind of there was space between it that we haven't yet defined, and I feel like
we're starting to now.
Is exactly what is the middle.
But I'll say if you like this game, definitely try the fourth one. The fourth one plays just like this game.
Did you play on PS3 this game? What did you play it on?
No, I bought the HD remaster for PS4 for this game.
Oh, okay. PS4,
okay. Which is good.
Yeah,
you get the DLC stuff with it too, right. And so it was good.
Well, you get the DLC with it, the Switch version too. So I would, if people are listening to this and have a Switch, this is a great Switch game.
Yeah.
So
I don't have a Switch, but this seems like this would be a perfect game to play on Switch.
Yeah. So definitely do that. And one thing I'll point out that I didn't know when I first, for like the first couple missions, I would say first like five missions, the analog stick has like very loose control, and the D-pad has the tight aiming control when you're aiming, guys.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize they had the tight aiming with the D-pad,
right.
So I was like, "Ugh!" And I was struggling with
walk,
it.
Use the D-pad.
Yeah, the D-pad also lets you walk.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. I didn't know that at all. I played through the whole game.
Super useful.
Wow. The more you learn. Do-do-do-do. Well, thank you guys for joining me today, and this will be the end of our podcast session. So we will be back hopefully next week if the world doesn't end, and that is a possibility these days. But everybody out there, please stay strong and keep up the hope. is my saying to you?
All right, Welkin.
Yeah, I'm gonna be very positive and talk like this. that's how Welkin talks in English, but. Nevertheless, you can check out the complete endless list on our Medium page. It's linked in the podcast description as well. Follow us on Twitter at itsobadpod. itsobadpod@gmail.com is the email address for you to berate us, send us your comments, send us your concerns if you think that we don't sound too well recently or that we are growing strange mustaches and facial hair. Just, you know, send us what you can do. But nevertheless, we'll be back next week in another episode. Thank you, Chris, and thank you, Matt, for joining us today.
All right.
Goodbye.
I'm Ted.